The amount to which the bomb contains the force of 1,000 tons of TNT. To bring it up, quote, the area begins from there. With Hiroshima, I suffered the full force of the first one, which held in the news and seems to have been obliterated. It's hard to think of anything else. On another page from my journal at that time, dated August 9th, things are happening with a rush and a force that give one a sense of living the most significant times of history, but also of helplessness in keeping abreast of them. Paragraph. The night after the atomic bomb announcement, Dr. Mink began his lecture on Nazis in Europe with a few words on the bomb. Pain and powder are supposed to bring a new era of peace and progress for men, for man, but they became the weapons of a more terrible war, of more terrible war. Also, but it's ridiculous to think that any one nation can keep the secret of such an instrument. Highly industrialized nations will be able to find it for themselves. But in spite of the irresponsible talk in the papers, things seem to be moving in the direction of international control. Link's talk revolved about nationalism being now identified in Europe with the working classes. Paragraph. Russia declared war on Japan this afternoon. It really looks like we are working together, at least on the paramount issues of the moment. Agreement has also been reached in Austria. The GIs will certainly be heartened by the news about Russia. Paragraph. On August 13th, 1945, we wound up our period, or a two-week period of study and review of some of the problems we're going to face in Germany, and left for New York to embark on the Santa Marta, scheduled to arrive in Plymouth, England, with a group of 150 UNRWA employees of German operation. It brought to end a hectic period of learning on the one hand, of getting uniforms, and making last minute preparations for our year or more of being trained in Washington on the morning of the 13th, arriving in New York about 11 o'clock, and was supposed to be on the boat by 4 that afternoon. It was a fine day, everybody was on board in time, and the boat left about 6 o'clock that evening. Paragraph. During the last days in Washington, the air was filled with the excitement of the premature announcement of the Japanese surrender. When we left, on the evening of the 13th, however, the news that they had surrendered had not been confirmed. Negotiations were taking place between representatives of the Japanese government and General MacArthur's headquarters in the Pacific, and those negotiations transmitted to Potsdam, where the representatives of the three great powers the meeting on the surrender of Germany. We were at sea 2 days, or at least a day and a half, before the confirmation of the surrender reached us by the ship's wireless. Here is a page in my diary of August the 15th. At sea on the Santa Marta. A week has passed. Both packed with further world-shaking news, and parallel to that, so much personal hustle and rush, leading to another leaving of Mimi and home, that in retrospect, the hours seem all run together, with no clear division of the days and no accurate sense of the relative significance of each happening. Most important is the news that the Japs have definitely surrendered. It came last night, after almost 4 days of waiting. Wild confusion on the part of the American press and radio services. Premature celebration in New York. New York had at least two, plus the real one, both parentheses, and widespread conjecture and debate on the terms of the surrender, permitting Hirohito to remain with sovereign powers as emperor. He apparently is to remain under the direct supervision of the Allies, with MacArthur as the Allied commander-in-chief. The Potsdam terms of surrender are said to be completely fulfilled. At least the overall holocaust has ended, and after years of unprecedented scientific, mechanized annihilation and misery, the world is officially at peace. The majority on the boat celebrated with drinking and lovemaking long into the night. The sea was peaceful. The heavens were filled with a galaxy of stars shining in almost three-dimensional brilliance. A beautiful soft red sunset seemed to offer its peaceful and grateful blessing to the end of all that has passed in the last half a decade.
Leaving New York on this occasion brought strange and poignant feelings. The months of dull inactivity in the army, the endless months of being shut off from the events and movement which were sweeping others into all parts of the world in extraordinary activities, the people who had never been abroad before, and many if not most of whom would have preferred to stay at home, dash, this experience of immobility, of watching what was going on, at best from the newsreels of a post theater, were hard to take. In 1937, as a student, I was in Greece. And the outbreak of the Spanish Civil War, I'd experienced the international tensions being cast for the universal war we were now in, both in Athens and in Crete. Coming back through Italy, I saw the effects of Mussolini's 15-year dictatorship and the half-guilty elation of the people at a time when their troops were coming back from their one-sided conquest of Ethiopia and preparing their propaganda and military offensive in Spain. In Paris, the mad passions of a divided country, threatened by encirclement as a result of the events in Germany, and the increasing ineffectiveness of collective security undermined by half-hearted support on the part of the Western nations, was also something which I had known. In 1937, I left for Czechoslovakia and stayed there from 1939, where I was an eyewitness to the whole of the country. In 1940 and 1943, I had spent the larger part of my time in Mexico and the west coast of South America, taking part in the efforts to secure this hemisphere against the inroads of Nazi propaganda and the fifth column. Paragraph. To have gone in the army and become isolated from the continuing stream of these events, to have had a direct participation in them cut off, seemed at best illogical. Paragraph. Now, with the war all but over, I was on my way back into it again. But as our small ship turned out into the Hudson, and the skyline of Manhattan slipped behind into the violet dusk, there came a sense of starting out into the new and unknown. as strong as I had ever known before. And with it, a loneliness almost mystical, in spite of the realization that there was a great work ahead, as well as adventure, and that those in our group formed a part of one of the greatest and most hopeful experiments of history, that of the first international civil service, which UNRWA, though born before the peacetime organization of the United Nations itself had been established, was the spearhead. Paragraph. I was standing on the top deck near the radio room as we passed the Statue of Liberty. Sharply defined in the clear evening air, its form softened by the colors of the evening, it was toweringly symbolic. Yet, in the atmosphere, the radio room was playing just in its definition as the outlines of the great monument on the horizon. It reminded me of a scene in the picture of John Thornton, engulfed in the tragedy of war, was anchored in the Caribbean. It seemed to intensify the longing that I felt for something undefined, and which so many during the 5 torture and fear. Paragraph. We went out to sea.
We had not been out money. 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 We had not been out money.
We went out to sea. We had not been gone more than a day and a half. We had not been gone more than a day and a half when one of the members of our company who had gone on board ill, was confined to his quarters, and the announcement was made. That he was suffering from meningitis. After, the rumor circulated around the ship that he would have to be taken back. And it was thought that the ship would return to New York in order to get him to a hospital. And yet, no no parts of the ship that we could notice.